Chair and honourable members. It's really a privilege for IDC to be here today. It's a topic that's very close to our heart. I first wanted just to introduce you to my team. To my left is Raul Goosen. He's a senior specialist in my unit, the Green Industries Business Unit. On my right, I've got Henny de Jager. He's the production manager at SA Calcium Carbide. And Andrew Carr next to him, who's from Sebenzana, who assisted us with the IDM application and work with Eskom. So I thought it very prudent at this point in time just to give you a sense of who we are and what we do. Please allow me just to give you a bit of background first on what we do, why we're excited about this, and where we are coming from. The presentation will be brief because I really believe that we must use this opportunity to engage with the committee and share with you some of the exciting stories and some of the challenges that we may also face in developing these type of projects. First of all, you may be aware the IDC has taken a very proactive approach in trying to drive the green economy. As the Chair mentioned, we are at the forefront. These are our focus areas. We established this unit on the 1st of April in 2011. You will see a lot of focus on renewables, and this is not the topic of today. Energy efficiency as well as our biofuels, and then fuel-based green energy, which is where we're going to focus most of the discussion today. When we talk about fuel-based, it's mainly waste to energy and cogeneration. Some of the projects that you heard about may be early phase projects. It may be that they're not yet fully developed. And what we're trying to do is really to be proactive in developing not only these industries, but also services related to these industries, which include local manufacturing. Just as a snapshot, I think this is a very interesting slide. You are very fortunate. I'm sharing very up-to-date information. This is our committed portfolio at the moment in the unit, over 10 billion rand that we already approved for the green economy, biased towards renewable energy, and this is mainly because of our participation in the renewable energy program. You will see as well the fuel-based energy at the moment focusing on 12% of our portfolio. So it is a significant portion that we already approved. Why is this important? We got four key pillars in terms of our strategies and what we would like to focus on. And with regard to fuel-based green power, you can see very important for us is to initiate and develop co-generation opportunities with large industrial players. We believe that if we can show and unlock the value with green with partners to buy green energy and to be more energy efficient, that they will also be competitive at the same token. However, there are a number of challenges to try and convince these big companies to invest in co-generation. When we talk about fuel-based green energy, I think it's a bit of a misnomer from time to time in terms of what are really the opportunities. And I won't go into a lot of detail in this slide, but what I would like to just share with you is that this is quite a diverse subsector in the green economy. You can have various waste feedstock feed-in fuels which you can use in order to generate your electricity. You have a primary process, which is also a technical process, which could be a range from pyrolysis to gasification. There's also a secondary process where you take your steam and your internal gas or combustion, or you can clean your gas and you can use biogas or compressed biogas, or you can have piped gas. Then you have a final process, which is your end use, where you can make electricity, you can have on-site heating, or you can recycle your waste, or you can have vehicle fuel or industrial fuel. And that's really where we see the opportunity for cogeneration, where many of these projects and big customers already, or companies already have this process on-site, just to take it to the next level in terms of cogeneration. It's very important because we say that fuel to cogeneration plant is a byproduct from an industrial process which manufactures carbide, cement, ferrochrome, and this is really how we classify cogeneration. So it's a byproduct. This by itself creates some challenges, and I'll chat about that a bit later. But it's an industrial process, and it itself is at the core of the business, which is the fuel supplier of the house. So it does create various complexities. However, at the end of the day, you need to sell the concept of being cleaner and greener and also support the sustainability of the business. When we as IDC looked at the cogeneration and waste-to-energy sector, the first question was, why aren't we seeing more of these projects being taken off? It should be just a no-brainer. If I'm a company and I'm so reliant on Eskom and I do have waste gas and waste, why don't I just go and generate my own electricity? There's a bit of a difference between normal waste-to-energy projects and cogeneration, and I think this slide just summarizes the two and some of the challenges that we have with regard to waste-to-energy. Very important in any of the waste-to-energy projects is the feedstock. In many cases, we have companies approaching us with business plans where they have secured a supply agreement for waste, and then they want to do a waste-to-energy project. However, the first question is, do you have a long-term feedstock security agreement, and how did you obtain that agreement? It must be at least 2 years longer than the funding. So if you have a 10-year agreement, we can look at a 7 or 8 year debt tenor on that facility. The quality is also very important. Remember, these projects are quite technical, so you need to do a full analysis of the feedstock supply and the technical abilities and characteristics. NFMA requirements, in many cases, the municipalities actually own the waste. So by the nature of the NFMA Act, they are required to follow certain procurement rules, and at the moment, for example, they can't sign a longer than 3-year contract, which by nature make it very difficult to fund in some cases some of these projects. The second important driver is the process and the investment. Typical cost is about 15 to 35 million rand per megawatt, depending on your feedstock. The reason why we really like this, and I think Eskom should love it, it's a 75% high, it's a very high load factor. To put it in comparison with PV, a PV project, if it's a good project, you will get about 20-22%. A wind project is around 30 to 35, maybe 37%. CSP, we're looking at 45% at the moment. So 75% is really very high. You can almost compare it to a baseload type of coal technology. The offtakes at the moment, low O&M costs. So if your ratio of your offtake to feedstock price...
What happened you were in between? OM. What is OMM on feedstock?
It's your operate and maintenance. It's your operate and maintenance cost. So it's very important that in some cases you have an independent O&M operator that will come and do the O&M function at your plant, mainly on waste to energy. In some cogen we have that as well, but in this case, for example, and Henny will share that with you, it's mostly the company that's involved in that. So we need to have a quick debt repayment with a low-cost power ratio to make many of these projects work. We are excited. We believe that there's a lot of opportunities. The biggest challenge is to sell it to these companies. Our model works that they should be able to service their debt repayments from the saving. So you calculate the payback period from your saving in electricity, and that should be able to service your loan so that there's not a net outflow of capital and debt repayment. This slide is a bit busy, but I thought I'll include it just to give the committee a sense of, you know, the nature and the opportunities. There's large industries that, as I said, got a lot of opportunity to produce into the grid. We believe that there's around about 2,000 megawatt available from some of these mining companies. The sugar industry, they were quite outspoken about their ability, and I'm sure the committee has engaged with them, where they claim that they can produce close to 1,000 megawatt. Pulp and paper industry came forward and they did approach government and also said that they can come up with 500 megawatt. So many of these projects are very similar to a cogen and how it's structured. So we believe that, you know, the positive drivers to unlock cogeneration, and this is very important. We got a carbon tax that potentially will be introduced next year. That will put a huge burden on companies. So as soon as they can do a positive project like a cogen, they will be able to possibly offset that expenditure. We look at the tax incentives at the moment available, which really make it very attractive for companies to look at these type of interventions. As electricity prices are increasing, we believe that will push more and more companies to look at cogen. The negative factors, and this is really what we're experiencing, I can sit here today and say that we receive a number of applications, but many of the large players come to us and they say, IDC, you finance the feasibility and come back when you prove to us that this can work. Now, in some cases, the feasibility costs up to 10 million, even more. And I'm saying to them, please share with us some of the risk. We will be more than happy to co-fund the feasibility with a developer that's in the energy space, but we would like to have these companies to buy into the concept, since that will, at the end of the day, benefit them directly. What we also find is that the payback period is longer than the core business, and in many cases, companies have a quick payback period. In this case, it's longer. They rely on the feedstock, so immediately you sit with a project where the host company, if they don't operate, then you actually don't have a feedstock. So that, by its nature, presents some challenges about our approach. We want to do more of these projects. We want to kickstart more of these projects. So we find innovative ways to try and finance it, where you look at various structures, you look at development funding, convincing the host to share risk with IDC. And I think to date, we've seen that there are a number of opportunities. We also engage with a green fund at the DBSA who is looking at feasibility study funding. And we are in discussions to maybe see how we can complement the funding that's available from government in order to attract more investment in this space. I'm going to ask Henny to present the part on SAC, and then Rahul will just do the final few slides. Thank you.
Thank you, Rensha. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's a great privilege for me to be here today to represent SA Calcium Carbide. I'm sure that maybe none of you have ever heard of SA Calcium Carbide before, and that is because we are here.
No, we know SACC, South African Council of Churches.
This is a different SACC, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we are hidden away in the northern parts of KwaZulu-Natal. We are situated in Newcastle, and as our name suggests, we produce calcium carbide. I will tell you a little bit later what is the function of calcium carbide. The company, as you can see, has roots dating back to 1952, where close to Newcastle there was a small little village called Barangay, where the first carbide factory and acetylene generation plant was built for South Africa that had much in common with Sasol of today. You know, they used acetylene as a carbon hydrogen input and then manipulated the chemical chains to produce various type of other chemicals. Now, SA Calcium Carbide was part of the AECI and Centrachem group that was mainly established in the early 80s. That was when South Africa faced sanctions and there was a big shortage of rubber in South Africa. So this plant was built to secure the supply of rubber to South Africa during the 80s. The process was basically you make calcium carbide, generate acetylene, and from the acetylene, you generate rubber. After the sanctions was lifted, this process is very energy intensive and very costly, a very costly way to make rubber and other synthetics. The use of the carbide furnace basically fell away. It was cheaper to import other raw materials from the east, petroleum-derived products. And calcium carbide had to develop as its own standalone business, supplying the market with calcium carbide. So in 2004, the carbide and the carbide assets was bought by an Argentinian-owned company, the Electrometallurgica Andina Group, or just in short, the Andina Group. And that is still the sole owners of SACC today. All right, we produce up to 72,000 tons of calcium carbide per annum, although the nameplate of our furnace is 90,000 tons per annum. All the carbide we produce, you'll see a little bit later in the slide, the three raw materials is electricity, coal, and reactive lime is locally sourced. We are basically sourcing our energy from the Newcastle municipal grid and not from Eskom directly. So as a user from the municipal grid, we account for 50% of Newcastle's total electricity consumption with our electric arc furnace. As I said before, we're the only producer of calcium carbide on the African continent. Our turnover is in the vicinity of 500 million rands per annum. And we are the sole supplier of calcium carbide to the gas industry and to the steel industry. Now, just in short, calcium carbide, if you react it with water, you form acetylene gas. It's just like that. You just pour water on it and acetylene gas comes off. Acetylene gas is used in the welding industry for oxyacetylene welding and oxyacetylene cutting, also in big industries when they cut thick steel plates. So we are the only supplier to Afrox, Air Liquide, Air Products, all the local gas manufacturers of the raw material they need to make acetylene gas. Secondly, our big local market is the metallurgical industry. ArcelorMittal, RBM, Namakwa Sands, everybody who needs to refine iron and remove sulfur from iron uses calcium carbide. It's milled and it's injected into the liquid iron and it then takes out the sulfur. We export between 50 and 60% of our production. The biggest export market is the Middle East and in the South Pacific region, New Zealand, Australia. And we also export a lot of calcium carbide into Africa, where it's informally used to generate acetylene gas. You know, a household may buy calcium carbide, generate the gas from it, and then just have a small little generator powering a stove or a other household device with something that needs heat. Right, the next slide, please. We are about 300 employees, permanent employees. Calcium carbide is produced in the electric arc furnace. That's a picture of a furnace. The furnace bowl is about 10 meters. It's got three electrodes in it, and we use between 30 and 50 megawatts of electricity per hour. Currently, we run at about 34 megawatts. We tap the calcium carbide at 2,200 degrees. You can see the calcium carbide tapping into some of the chill pots, where it is cooled and then crushed and further worked. There's just a chemical reaction. It's a little bit of a science lesson. The raw material is coal, reactive lime, and then you get calcium carbide. And, of course, all this needs energy. Now, the interesting part of this equation is that part there. When you form calcium carbide, naturally, you have carbon monoxide gas coming off from the process. And that is the interesting part that sparked the idea of this project. There's just a slide from the local municipality. You can see in these areas the dips is when the furnace was off for a short period, switching out to check something or to do some scheduled maintenance or repairs. You can see there's the Newcastle grid. If we switch off, the electricity demand is basically halved. All right, there is the flare. Coming from the furnace roof is a big chimney where the CO gas was in the past being burned. It's a legal requirement as part of our air emissions license that you have to combust and burn the CO before releasing it into the atmosphere. And that's a lot of energy that was just going to waste. So in 2010, due to the increasing costs of electricity, we started venturing and investigating some ideas on how we can use this waste heat. This is just a brief overview of our plant. There's the carbide furnace with the flare coming off the furnace. What we do is we actually suck the CO gas and the dust generated in the furnace through a wet scrubbing plant where the gas is basically sprayed with water to remove all the dust and solid particles from it. That CO gas is then cleaned and sent to the flare to combust. And also we used it in a big horizontal kiln that we used to dry the anthracite with. It's important not to put any wet material into the furnace. After the cogen project, we decided to go for internal combustion and not for steam or any other means because this is the most efficient way that we could find. It's basically the same process, but we installed a second gas plant because you need clean gas to operate these engines. And to increase the availability, we added a second gas plant. And then we installed four Jenbacher 620 engines that is run from special gas. And they are the only supplier we could find globally, excluding China, that can give us a solution to use the type of furnace gas we have. Because although I say it's carbon monoxide, it's actually a mixture of carbon monoxide and hydrogen. And the combustion characteristics of that gas is strange. You know, the hydrogen wants to burn faster than the CO, and you need to accommodate that in your engine technology. There's just a picture. You can see these big V20 engines. There's 10 pistons on this side, 10 pistons on the other side. Each of these cylinders is 5 liters, so it's like having a big truck, you know, 20 big trucks packed into this engine, and we have 4 of them. The generation capacity is designed to be 2 megawatt hours per engine, although at the moment we're only running it at 1.55. Because of the special gas, we've been advised by Jenbacher not to increase the load higher than 1.55 megawatts at the moment. Okay, so the highlights. This facility enabled us to generate 8 megawatts of electricity from our waste gas. Now, that equates to between 10 and 20% of our total electricity requirements that we now have to use less from Eskom. So what is important about our project is we are the only users of the electricity we make. What we make, we consume in the furnace again. And if the furnace is off, we don't make electricity. So it's a completely embedded use of electricity. Of course, there's a big saving. If we don't have to buy the electricity from Eskom and we can generate it from gas that we're currently burning into the atmosphere, in the long term, it will save us money. Depending on how much increases is passed via Eskom to the consumers. We also registered this project as a CDM project with the UNFCCC, that's United Nations Convention for Climate Change. So this is a true green project. We can register it as a green project because this project displaces the coal requirements from Eskom. So Eskom has to take out less coal and generate 8 megawatts hour less electricity for us because we are being more efficient. The project was commissioned in December 2013 after we turned soil in January. So the project was really done very quickly. But, sorry man, it's December 2012 and we started basically in January 2012. And we funded, of course, our project was funded with the IDC, and the total cost of the project was around 105 million South African rands over a period of 10 years. Okay, if you look at the carbon credit side of things, by displacing the coal requirements of Eskom, we are going to be saving equivalent of 350,000 CO2 units over 10 years, so that's 35,000 per annum. We have registered our project, although we're still waiting for the UNFCCC to formally approve our and tell us that we can start trading our carbon credits. We haven't started trading yet. Okay, Raul, are you going to take this or should I continue? Okay, we also, Andrew Carr from Sebenzana assisted us. We applied for the Eskom IDM grant, and we were very fortunate in that the grant was granted to us. We still have to run our baseline period, but we were basically granted this grant because we will be reducing the red line indicate our normal load requirements, and the green area is the new load requirements. So for the time between 6 in the morning and 10 in the evening, we will be reducing demand from the Eskom grid over the next 3 years, and that is why the project was concluded and approved. All right, Raul, I think this one is off to you.
Thank you very much, Henny.
Thanks.
Yeah, I apologize. I put 13 instead of 12 in, and he told me to correct. Yeah, but I think, you know, they say the Titanic wouldn't have sunk if the carbide industry had been around those days, because the carbide that goes into steel, it makes the steel less brittle. So so there's had some knock-on effects, apart from being good for the South African economy and adding the 500 million
rand of value. This is just summarizing the benefits of their project. So you saw that there was the electricity reduction in terms of what they use and also what Newcastle as a municipality uses. So obviously it takes that peak pressure off the grid. And it's very good because whenever the furnace is on, which is using 40, 50 megawatts, it's reducing the cogen plant works in line. So it sort of follows the load. So it reduces those peaks that Eskom is really battling with now in the winter. So it's even better than base load in some ways because it's directly off the peak demand. When the furnace runs and it needs 40 or 50 megawatts, it's saving sort of 6 to 8 megawatts of usage. Of course, SAC spend about, at current electricity prices, about 100 million rand a year on electricity. So for them, it's a saving of between 15 and 20 million rand a year on the electricity bill. And of course, you know, if they didn't do something like this, the electricity bill was 50 million a few years ago. But of course, you know, now it's 100 million. And if with electricity prices going up, you know, and being, you know, one of the largest input costs, it could actually cause the business to go under. And then you'd lose the 1,000 jobs in the value chain of adding value to South African commodities. So it's very important for industry to be more efficient. They've done some work in terms of training staff and, of course, combating climate change, just really summarizing their benefits. If we look at cogen a little bit more holistically, you know, what is a typical cogen opportunity? It's basically where an industrial host who's a big user of energy or has an energy source on site, like the sugar industry have the bagasse. They take the sugar juice out of the cane, but what's left is the fiber, the bagasse, and they can then And we use the word waste, I put it in inverted commas, because obviously it has value, because you can use it to make the pulp and paper and things like that. So it has value, but sometimes it's waste, like in terms of waste gas at the SAC process. And so it's as you run your industrial process, you generate this co-product or this waste, which sometimes is difficult to store. The host can typically take this waste and then reduce their electricity consumption, typically between 5 and 20%. But you have some industries like the sugar industry say they can go net neutral. In other words, they'll produce exactly what they use in terms of electricity consumption by taking all their bagasse and generating steam and electricity for their process. There are some industries that buy in certain fuels that actually end up with excess. They can produce more electricity than they need, and then they need to sell that electricity to the grid. There's sort of three different types, where it's a small amount, where it's roughly exactly what they use, or sometimes where they can have excess electricity to sell. But it's typically not the core business of the host, and that was a point that Renshaw was making, is that they don't initially focus on it, and their boards don't want to initially invest in electricity generation. That's why it's... Cogen maybe hasn't happened as much as it should have. Renshaw mentioned the high load factor, and it really, when the industry is operating, it would be using, in the case of SAC, 40, 50 megawatts, but the cogen plant generates 6 to 8, so it just reduces the load that they take off the Eskom grid. And it's because it's utilizing excess or waste energy, it's classified as green, and you've essentially got a free fuel, fuel that's available on site. So the costs of power generation in the long term are lower than Eskom generation. But in the short term, you need to spend the capital. Okay, so SACC, as an example, had to spend 100 or 105 million to put this plant in, and they need to pay that back. And you can see if they're saving sort of 10 or 15% of the electricity bill, they're saving 10 to 15 million rand a year. So it takes 10 years to pay it off. And often companies don't want to, if they're a platinum company or a ferromanganese company, they don't necessarily want to put their money into electricity generation. It's not their core business. So it takes a bit of a mindset change and special financing. But in the long run, for the country, it's utilizing waste. It's the lowest cost power electricity that we can generate. Okay, thanks. So I'm sort of linking into this. Why has little cogen happened? You know, Renshaw's slides spoke of opportunities of about 3,000 megawatts in the country. Why has it all happened? Well, one of the things is the process, you know, there was the white paper on renewable energy, which included cogen as one of the target areas of 2003. It said we need to do cogen. It's more energy efficient. It's renewable, using, you know, bagasse from sugar cane. But we didn't really have a problem those days. You know, Eskom had more electricity than what the market needed, and power prices were very low. So there was no incentive for someone like SACC to spend the 100 million rand, because the electricity bill those days was maybe 30 million rand, you know. And they would have only saved if, you know, they wouldn't have been able to pay it back. And, of course, interest rates were a bit higher, and they've come down. But and then, of course, Eskom started in 2008, had difficulties, and then they went out on a buying scheme to buy power from cogen projects. But Eskom, at that stage, said they would buy, but they had a declining price, because they said when Medupi and Kusile come online, that the power price will drop back to 35 cents at that stage. So no one really wanted to enter into agreements where they were going to sell the power back to Eskom at 35 cents, you know, in 2018, in real terms. Then there was a program that NERSA started, the pilot national cogeneration project, and COFIT. And then government said, no, the COFIT was where they were going to, it was like the refit. They'd announce a price that they'd pay for co-generated power. This is the price we'll pay to catalyze the investment, make people like SACC, the ferrochrome industry, those type of people, the sugar industry, invest. But the government said, no, it must rather go on a tender basis. It mustn't be a fixed price. Okay, like the renewables went from a refit to a bidding process. So this bidding process now, the position's been decided, but when the RP 2010 was done, there wasn't an allowance done for co-generated power. And part of it is because it's a confusing thing. Is it own use or is it power that's going to be sold to the grid? And but in December last year, the Minister of Energy gave an 800 megawatt determination that there will be 800 megawatts of cogen, and they want it in the shorter possible time. You can see SAC started turning, their project was already operating in December, and we've been working on it with them since late 2010, and doing the EIAs and things. So the regulatory process was really only put in place in 2012, and now the RFI that the Department of Energy is going to issue that in the next month or two, and then these cogen projects can tender, because they really need some incentive to get that investment to happen, but not necessarily long-term power purchase agreements for 10 years or 15 or 20 years. They just need something to catalyze the investment, because ultimately, when the capital's paid back, when Henny and them have paid back that 100 million, they're essentially getting that electricity almost for free, just for that O&M, for the operating and maintenance costs. So it's just the cost of the oil changes in their case. There's different technologies whether you have it. I think that's one thing that, if I had to look back at again, I did have some discussions with SAC at the time, we should rather have put fuel cells in for rather than engines. For two reasons. A fuel cell is twice as efficient as an engine, because it doesn't generate as much heat. An engine, although you take that gas and you generate electricity, about a third of the gas forms electricity, and the other third goes up the exhaust of the engine as heat, just like motor cars, and you had the Eskom people talking. But electric, if you go to a fuel cell, it's like an electric motor, it's far more efficient. It's 50%, 60%, so twice as efficient. And South Africa, and the other reason is South Africa has platinum, and platinum goes into fuel cells. So, but I think that's something more for the future. But, you know, because that technology is still being developing, like the electric car that you heard about. But, anyhow, the RFI is coming out, but I think one of the things is that RFIP, government wants to do a PPA, you know, like a long-term, or might want to do a long-term PPA, and I don't think that's what the cogen industry needs. They don't need a 15-year, because it's a saving. They're saving their electricity usage. So there was the Eskom RDM, which they got, which was very useful to catalyze and help their project to happen, where Eskom pay, as if you change your light bulbs, you know, to reduce your demand. Another thing is you can take your waste heat and generate electricity, which also reduces your demand. So, but at the moment, that RDM has been stopped for cogen. NERSA in the MYPD3 ruling said no, that Eskom, you know, mustn't give the grants for generating your own electricity to reduce your demand. So that's something that's in discussion at the moment. So there's different ways to try and get this cogen to happen. The RFIP, we think, is going to be quite open, and together with the industry, we're going to put proposals in and say we're not looking for a long-term...
What's an RFIP? What's a PPA?
Okay.
I know RFI might be request for...
For information, or proposals or registration. This is what the Department of Energy is going to issue for cogen plants for that 800 megawatts. And then the PPA is the power purchase agreement, the electricity purchase agreement. So... looking at the PPA, the power purchase agreement, the cogen industry is of the view they don't need a 15 or 20-year agreement. They just need some sort of capital incentive, which is really the option four that we've looked at, like an Eskom RDM subsidy. Of the order of, if you work it out, if you take 5 million a megawatt that they pay for changing light bulbs or making your process more efficient, because you're actually investing in new capacity for the country. So you need to get higher than, let's say, the historic electricity price. It works out at about 10 to 15 cents a kilowatt hour support that you're getting if you receive a grant of, say, 5 million a megawatt or something. But the other way might be through a PPA for a short period of time. The one problem to guarantee electricity supplies, if Sachs furnace doesn't operate, in other words, not using the 40, 50 megawatts, then there's no cogen. You've got no fuel. You've got no waste heat, so you can't generate the 6 to 8 megawatts. So it's very difficult to have to guarantee something to government that we're going to deliver so much electricity. But actually what you do is if you don't run the plant, you're effectively giving 40 megawatts of electricity that you're not using that is then available for other people to use. So it's one of the complexities, and we hopefully, that with the industry responses on this RFI, request for information, or RFP for proposals, we hope that that'll be clarified. Then just my last slide. So cogen, for the country, if you look at it from the country's point of view, it's taking our waste heat or waste bagasse. Again, I use waste because sometimes the industry don't like to call it waste because they sell it to the guy next door, or waste wood chips or sawdust at a sawmill, and it saves fossil fuel usage. Okay, by using that waste energy, and it makes the country more energy efficient. It lowers our greenhouse gas emissions, and the thing is, it's essentially close to a free fuel. So when the capital is repaid, you're using that waste gas or waste heat. Yes, CHP. Have I got CHP there? Yeah. Okay. CHP, combined heat and power. Because most of these cogen, if you look at Eskom, they just make electricity, and that's why they're about 30% or 35% efficient, Eskom power stations. If you look at something like a SAPI or a cogen project, you make electricity and you make heat, and normally you get about 60, 70% efficiency by generating from a fuel source electricity and heat together. In Germany, about 15% of their power is generated by combined heat and power to make their economy more efficient. So Africa, why we didn't do it in the past was because our electricity prices were so low that there was no incentive for anyone to generate their own electricity. So lots of people generate their own heat, industrial process, but they didn't take that waste heat and generate electricity with it. So with the current power prices going up, it's becoming, there's more of a business case now to take the waste heat and generate power together with the heat. And when you do that, you're twice as efficient as a normal Eskom-type process. So once the investment's done, like they've made the investment, essentially they're getting the electricity for a very low cost once they've repaid the capital, but they need some support to repay the significant capital investment. And it's not often their core business, although in their case, 30% of their costs of production are electricity, so they really were very focused on electricity. But most of these big users that can cogen, at least 20% of their costs of their business is electricity. So there's a big impact if the electricity price doubles. It can go from 20% of their costs to 40%, and if they're only making a 10% profit, well, the factory will shut down, So I believe it's in the national interest to facilitate investment sooner. It's particularly given the tight Eskom power supply, because it lowers it makes more capacity available on the grid. It's lower cost for the country than the new coal-fired power stations. And it's cleaner and it saves our coal, so that coal is then available as a country resource to sell later. From RDC side, we're supporting industry and developers, because sometimes the host, like SACC, develop the project, but a lot of industries, they say, no, we're in the platinum business or we're in the ferrochrome business. We know we've got waste gas or waste heat, but it's not our business to make electricity. So you're getting some developers. But we don't really have many of these developers in South Africa because traditionally Eskom has controlled all of electricity. So it's almost like those developers are now forming what we call IPPs, independent power producers, generating power from using waste gas. And then I just mentioned the fuel cells again. If we put fuel cells in at SAC, we would have got probably double the power and used South Africa's platinum. But the technology is still at an infancy stage, and it's one thing area RDC is working on. So I think... We saw there's a potential of a few thousand megawatts of cogen for the country, which is a good thing. And I believe that if the right incentives, the right PPA, the right power purchase agreement, or capital incentive is given, we'll have these projects happening. If not, a lot of these industries are going to wait until the power prices get to their max. Some will never do it because it's not their core business, or some industries might only do it when in 5 years' time, when electricity prices in real terms are at their peak. Because when you invest capital, you want to get your money back quickest. If you do it when the prices, electricity is at its peak, you get your money back instead of, like in SAC's case, 8 years. These other, if they did it 5 years later, they'd get their money back in about 3 or 4 years. If the electricity bill would be, say, 200 million rand, and they're saving instead of 10, 15, 15 to 20 million a year, it would be 30 to 40. So you need some sort of incentive or catalyst to make the cogen investments happen in the country. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hoffman. That was quite a mouthful. Just before I hand over to the members, what's PNCP?
So that was the pilot national cogeneration project that NERSA were running, but then it was moved to Department of Energy to rather do it through a co-bid process. So I use co-bid is a cogeneration bidding process, which is the one that we're expecting the inquiry documents in the next month or two. Treasury and DOE have said that they will be issuing them shortly.
That's fine. Honourable members, over to you. That is Lau, Honourable Kreding, ma'am. Much better.
Chairperson, thanks for inviting them here. We spoke about this thing of carbon capture for quite some years, and the last time I spoke about it, some people were saying some research and studies are being made elsewhere. I'm happy to hear that we are now at a stage where we are able to produce electricity from waste of some kind. But much difficult for me is this waste. And as we go on, we will find out why I have difficulty. Just wishing to confirm, firstly, the issue of carbon emission. You spoke about carbon monoxide and hydrogen together. I am not very sure whether you're referring to this as your production, or you're referring to this as what you capture in order to convert into electricity. That is the first area. And you made reference to the sugar companies, the sugar industry. Do you really have to ban the waste from the sugar industry as a way to create electricity? Or do you plant, to make sugar plantations to ban them for the purpose of that? Because I'm my question here is related to issues of food security, that we should not find ourselves moving into the kind of what we call waste as impacting negatively to the basic need, which is to eat. Now, coming to, it's unfortunate that you have not marked your slide so that I can say to you it's slide number so. But the opportunities that you are referring to there, the slide on the electricity from waste heat or fuel to make existing industry more efficient, I think that slide is there. You are covering a whole area of the industry, such as the ferrochrome, manganese, silicon, carbon, and You're talking about waste along those industries. What waste are you referring to there? What is the waste there? Just to get more clarity about this kind of waste, as I said earlier. The last question, Chairperson, is the issue that in the latest part of the presentation, mention was made that the government is about to make PPAs, power produce production agreement, with the IPPs, and that the co-generation people are not interested in that kind of an agreement because they do not want to bind themselves to the risks over a period of 15 years. What is it that they would like to have in respect to entering this field of business? Thanks, sir.
Okay. Honorable Khaili.
Fantastic, Chair. Thanks. I'm really glad that this presentation has been made because it's an issue that has really bothered me. And in fact, when the DG of Energy came to this committee, I think it was about 2 months ago, she said that a number of cogen projects had been promised by industry a few years ago, but that none had been delivered. And clearly that's not the truth. I mean, one has been delivered here. But also, I mean, my question to her was to say, well, I mean, if they haven't been delivered, then what is it that government can do to ensure that we create the right incentives so that we bring this onto the grid? Because, I mean, my huge grievance with all of this is that you're talking here around about 3,500 megawatts of energy when we are in an electricity crisis at the moment. And I fail to see why we haven't moved faster to bring this stuff online. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I'll be interested to know what is the lead time for most of these projects, because from this project it was about a one-year lead time, which is extremely quick. I mean, that's probably one of the quickest ways of bringing more electricity onto the grid, or at least taking the demand off the grid. So I'd just be interested to know what the average lead time would be for a lot of these projects. And I mean, we also heard the presentation from NERSA, and the reason why they said they withdrew the funds from the IDM program, I think it was two reasons, essentially. The one is that ESCOM institutionally shouldn't really be in charge of pushing energy efficiency in the long run. So I agree with that on an institutional level. As long as another organization or another agency in government takes up the flak for that and actually gets properly budgeted to do the kind of energy efficiency that ESCOM was doing. So that is something that we'll have to monitor as a committee to ensure that that happens. But the other reason was that they said that, well, businesses will do this anyway because it's in their economic interest. But clearly there's a market failure here. Clearly if businesses aren't doing this anyway, even if it does produce electricity very cheaply, then we as government need to step in and we need to say what kind of incentive will work best to ensure that this energy comes online as soon as possible. And so what I'm interested in, I don't have the one slide that you had, which I think was the most important slide, around what kind of incentive scheme should we set up that will generate co-generation in South Africa, that will bring it online. Are we talking about a capital subsidy? Are we talking about a tax break? Are we talking about paying for the electricity? From what I'm hearing, you're saying that won't work too well because it's actually the upfront capital cost, that other problem. Can you tell us what scheme would work best that would then unlock this market and actually lead to more companies bringing this energy online? Because I really think this is something we have to tackle, and I fail to see why we haven't done it so far. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Why didn't I pick this up before? I know about that, Margaret, but it says that, I remember, every time CoGen comes up, we all check up because we see the significance of it. You know, but anyway, Matwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is to be about the calcium carbide, which was started in 1952. And you said it stopped. I don't know. So during early 80s, because of the sanctions, it was there in order for the government to have rubber. But then it stopped after. Why did it stop? I didn't quite get that, so I just want clarity on that one. And the about the electricity, saying that there was a lot of electricity that time before. I don't know whether was it your business or someone else's business to make sure that electricity becomes enough for the people, because that time when it was a lot, it had a few people to supply to. People didn't have electricity like now. And about the municipalities, the waste that goes to the municipalities, you spoke about the waste. The waste belongs to the municipality. I don't know whether these municipalities are given the correct way of how do they use the waste that the municipality collects, because at places, at sometimes some municipalities, you find that there's waste all over. They don't keep their waste in one place. Is that correct? Or does it need somebody to oversee that? Thank you, Chairperson.
And unless I missed out and didn't pick it up, can you just rehash why this PNCP flounder? Maybe in more detail, it will be quite helpful. Well, I have a few suggestions to make to members. Yeah, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to make two or three general...
Just another thing. Oh, no. It's a suggestion as well. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I'll just make two general comments, and then I'm going to ask Henny to talk about the specific questions related to SAC, and then I'll ask Rahul just to comment on the PNCP and also some of the comments on the sugar industry, since he has been quite involved with that. Maybe just by starting saying that the comment we made about the fact that the companies don't necessarily want the PPAs is a bit harsh. I think we need to be very open-minded when we talk about what does companies or government want and what does the industry want. What is happening here, there's a lot of outcry to government from the companies to say, we would like to supply electricity, but give us an enabling framework. Give us something like you've done for the wind and the solar, because that's really taking off. And there's a lot of engagement with the DOE at the moment and the IPP office. And what I understand is that it's now at a point where the government said to the IPP office, which are jointly established with DOE and National Treasury, is to go and look at what does the industry want. So my belief is that there's definitely more of an openness. However, the thinking is still around a PPA, and that raised some questions, because the one company may be able to, let's use a sawmilling company as an example. Most of the sawmills in this country are in desperate need of investment, serious levels of investment in order to support them to be more sustainable. They also rely on their forestry assets at the moment, and many of the forestry companies can't sign a 20-year or even a 15-year or even a 10-year PPA. When I met the SAPI CEO, I said to Ralph Boetge, are you prepared to submit a bid under the renewable energy IPP and sign a 20-year PPA? And he said to me, never in my life, because I would rather invest my money first in getting my sawmill up to speed. So that is part of the challenge. With some industries, and that's the sugar industry, which Rahul will talk about, they only operate for 9 months of the year. 3 months of the year, they cannot supply into the grid. So you need to find a framework or a PPA that can accommodate that. Now, what has government said? When we met with them 2 weeks ago, and I really appreciate the dialogue that they always initiate with the IDC, because we're very close to industry, was that we're going to put out an RFI and we're going to invite companies to come to us and say, I've got a cogen project, but this is really what I want in terms of the PPA, in terms of further engagement, and we're going to sit around the table and negotiate with them, which is very different from the process they're currently following with the IPPs. There's a PPA on the IPPs, renewable energy, take it or leave it, which I think is the best approach government took because there's so many players at the moment. So that is still hoping to happen within the next 2 to 3 months, that process to start. However, the test will be how flexible will government be. In our engagements, again, your question, Honourable Geiling, what do they need? Is it rather an IDN incentive? I can tell you that maybe that is the solution. Maybe we are too blind to say we just incentivize this industry at this point in time, kickstart it, and then it will happen. I can share with you we've got a Green Energy Efficiency Fund, which we launched 3 years ago with KfW, the German Development Bank, specifically targeting energy efficiency for SMEs and companies. Of the 500 million rand, we've only committed 135 million rand to date. And 50 million of that is in this project that you see today. And the biggest challenge is to show companies, to just make them aware of the benefit. That money is at prime lease too. And I think what we try to do is complement our funding with the IDM incentives at this point in time. If the IDM incentives at Eskom falls away, it will be sad, because I can show you, and surely Eskom can share the numbers, it's unbelievable what they've achieved. I think to date more than 3,000 megawatts has been saved. We tried to do a match in terms of our board asking me the question, what was the cost of that? Is that similar to the cost of a Medupi? It's very difficult to compare that rand for rand, but it is believed to be 3 to 6 times cheaper than building a new power station. So we can't underestimate the benefit of the IDM at this point in time. So I don't think I've answered you in terms of what is necessary to unlock. We're in a very exciting time at this point in time. I don't know if Andrew, maybe after Henny spoke, he can add his view as well, since he's very involved in the IDM sector. But what we're going to see, hopefully, in the next few months, is a lot of activity in this space. And I think the carbon tax, if that's a reality next year, it's going to make these companies think much more harder. My comment just on the municipalities, since I've raised it, yes, a lot of municipalities are spending a lot of money to try and find programs on how to more efficiently manage their waste and utilize their waste. With respect to the municipalities, I think there's a lot of capacity challenges. We find that, for example, one of the municipalities approach us for advice. It's very difficult for us, since that's really DBSA's role, so we try to direct them to DBSA. But there are a lot of opportunities. We're also engaging with government on the 3-year contract that the municipalities can sign on their waste, because as soon as we can change that, you immediately sit with a project that is easier to fund, because your payback on these projects are not 3 years. You normally look at the 8-year to 10-year payback. So if they can enter into longer-term agreements on the tender basis, then it will certainly assist us from a funding perspective. What we also try to do is take the projects, have SPV type of structures where the municipality is not necessarily a shareholder of that entity. So it will make it easier where you have private players to participate, but then you again looking at the PPP type of model, which is also time consuming, and there's a number of challenges in trying to unlock that. I think, Kenny, if you can comment on the questions related.
Okay, thanks, Rensha. Just to add in, the project, the idea for this project actually developed from a landfill gas site that we saw at Marion Hill in Durban. And that is when we realized that you can use internal combustion of your gas to make electricity. So just something on the side. Okay, the question is pertaining to waste gas. Rensha, can you go back on the presentation to me until we find that slide of the chemical formula. Okay, one forward, that's it. Okay, if we look at the production of calcium carbide, it's a fact that although we're only interested in calcium carbide, that little rock there, we will end up with carbon monoxide that is forming in the process. That is a fact. It is not something that we want. If we could wish it away, it would not be there. And we have to take care of that somehow, because it's poisonous. If you inhale carbon monoxide, you will die. And the way most industries today deal with carbon monoxide is they push it up a chimney and they burn it. If you are a producer today and you have carbon monoxide as a byproduct, chances are 90% that you will just burn it, you will turn it into CO2, and then it will be safe to be released into the atmosphere. That will be the requirements of your air emissions license. So it is not something that we produce deliberately, but it is something that we have and that we've always just, we had to burn it to get rid of it. And that gas now is what we are using. We are saying, okay, let's not burn it in the atmosphere. Let's put it through the engines, combust it, and make electricity with it. Okay. Then this is true for a lot of other chemical industries as well, for the steel industry, for the ferrochrome industry. If you drive at night, even at Sasol, and you see somewhere that there's a flare burning, it means that these people are actually venting waste gas, CO most probably, that can be used to generate electricity. Okay. The next question was relating to the lead time. I just want to make a comment relating to the lead time of the project. The project actually initiated in the beginning of 2010 already. And although we were very quick in the construction phase, the project actually took 3 years to commission. And I do think it was a quick project. So in my opinion, I think a typical project will be less than 5 years. There was another comment made. Why did SACC stop producing rubber? Now, to explain this is, to make rubber, synthetic rubber, you need a chemical called polyisoprene. Okay? Now, today that chemical is imported from the Middle East because it's a natural byproduct of petroleum production. In the 80s, they couldn't import that. So what they did was, they made calcium carbide, then they made acetylene gas, then they took the acetylene gas and they deconstructed it and they built it again to make polyisoprene. And then they took the polyisoprene to make rubber. So it's a very long, complex, roundabout way of making rubber. So the minute you could get that raw material, that building block cheaper, production of rubber through acetylene and calcium carbide was no longer feasible. And that is why that was stopped. The factory where we are situated actually still produces rubber today, and we still produce calcium carbide. But they import their raw material, and we now make calcium carbide that we sell and export. And I think that was the questions for SACC. If there's any more questions, please feel free.
I think Rahul will just respond on the question about the sugar and the food security, and then Andrew can comment on the IDE.
Yeah, thank you. Just to come into the sugar one, you asked about waste, Honourable Member, and really the waste is any energy that's not used or that in an industrial process, whether it's bagasse, which is that material that they get from the sugar cane. They extract the sugar juice, and the bagasse is the fiber that's left. Or whether it's in the SACC case, it's the waste gas coming off their process. It can often be waste heat. So you can have waste heat that can utilize to generate steam, and that steam can then make electricity. So South Africa traditionally hasn't utilized that waste heat to generate electricity because Eskom prices were very low, and we had excess power as a country. So that was really, you know, it's unutilized, let's say, energy that's at an industrial site. Okay. Coming into the sugar industry, Rencha mentioned, of course, the sugar industry only harvests cane certain times of the year, so that's when their mills are running to produce sugar, say 9 months of the year. Luckily, it's during the winter season when we have the peak demand, so they can produce electricity for just the 3 months in the summer that they can't. But essentially, they have that bagasse, and worldwide, the sugar industry produces power from the bagasse, the leftover fiber. What they also can then do is they can bring in more of the cuttings that they currently that's not sugar containing, that's left in, they call it the tops and of the cane, that's left in the field and often is burnt in the field, and it's just wasted energy. You know, it's burnt with no source. Now they can bring that into the mill and burn it to generate electricity. Essentially what we're looking at is we're not looking at taking the sugar part or the maize part. We're looking at whatever's left as the waste. So if you had a maize, if you took the waste from the maize, the cob, the corn, the cuttings would be utilized, and there'd be extra jobs created through sometimes collecting the extra material. And of course it makes the industry's cost of production lower because they're generating some of their own power and earning revenue out of that waste stream. I think sort of leading in to the lead times and the incentives, it varies. You know, a lot of the industries have done the work, they've prepared it. The numbers we've got is anywhere between to commission projects, if they got the go-ahead in terms of the incentives or the off-take mechanism, because sometimes they need to wheel, they've got too much power on one site, they need to send to another site, between 6 months and about 2 years. So there's some projects that can come online in 6 months, some 12 months, you know, some 18, up to 24 months, typically, these projects. Depending on, but a lot of the work has already been done. The sugar industry has done the designs. They know it, the SAPIs, those type of people, the Mondis, know what they can do. They've got EIAs for a lot of the projects already. So that work, you know, behind the scenes work has been done. Then linking into why the PNCP, the Pilot National Cogeneration Project, founded. I think because it was really linked to the refit, where they were going to have a fixed price and say, there's a price. If you generate so much electricity, this is what you'll get for cogen. And there were some prices calculated, but it varies tremendously. What the cost of generating at SACC from their waste gas is quite different for the sugar industry or a sawmill. So it's industry specific. And I think that's why the process now that the IPP office wants to run, where they're going to go out on a request for proposals and industry proposals, that this is what I can do, this is when I can do it in terms of timing, and this is what I need to make it happen. So those three things, then I believe the IPP office are going to go into negotiate and create the right framework for the various projects where it fits in the country's needs. And I think quite a lot of them that can deliver power shortly at relatively low cost, and most of them can, are clearly in the country's needs. I think that, covered all.
Good afternoon, Chair, honourable members, colleagues. Range has just afforded me the opportunity there to comment on the ESCOM IDM, so Integrated Demand Management, which you'll be well aware of. And I think when we talk about ESCOM IDM, which may be helpful for yourselves as you look at the whole landscape of energy opportunities, when one looks at cogeneration, as we are doing today, one needs to think about the cogenerators who will have excess power and will want to sell power, and hence will want power purchase agreements and will need power purchase agreements, to Rensha's comments. And many of the sectors have cried out for suitable power purchase agreements. So there's that category and there's that basket when we talk about cogeneration. They want to sell power. But there's also the important category, and today we've looked at a project that fits into that category, of self-use or self-consumption or embedded generation, whatever you might want to call it. It's also a part of cogeneration. And it's really the ESCOM IDM activities and grants into that sector have really supported that part, that basket of the cogeneration opportunities, such as South African calcium carbide, as we've seen. And I think what's really important to note on this basket of opportunities for self-use, so there's no power purchase agreements involved. They're using the power themselves. I think that point's been made very clearly. But what underpins the whole thing is energy efficiency. These are the cheapest, best productivity, best value creation megawatt hours there are, on the grid. Certainly from a cost perspective. And certainly from a cost perspective from the government and from Treasury, these are the best megawatts out there, because they're inherently driven by energy efficiency, about making things good. You heard Raoul referring to Germany, 15% of their energy coming from these sort of sources. So, energy efficiency, that underpins the IDM grants. At this point, there's an array of them, and ESCOM have been creative and I think must be applauded in being, have explored ways to bring incentives to bear on the sector and to stimulate growth. In this instance, it's a capital incentive, and I think it's the one that makes a hell of a lot of sense. Just to help, as Raul correctly alluded to, SACC and similar companies could wait for the peak electricity tariffs of 2016, 2017. They could wait until it makes more compelling economic sense, or they could be first movers and pioneers now and move with such incentives. And if we look at our supply-demand situation, clearly as South Africans, we want to make these projects happen now because they're the best megawatt hours we'll get. And their biggest bang is going to be, let's hope, it's only over the next 2-3 years when supply is so tight. But there's no doubt for our national psyche, for our national industry, for all of the good stuff that comes with that, the best bang for buck comes now. And so I really, you know, want to passionately say that, you know, this sector of cogeneration projects needs IDM grants to push them over the line sooner rather than later. It's all very well for NERSA to say, and clearly they've got another perspective on the matter, which I respect, but it's all very well for them to say that industry will do this themselves, yes, maybe in 2017, 2018, 2019. So we need to make a compelling environment for them to do it now, for good reason. And then secondly, I also appreciate that they're saying, you know, ideally this shouldn't be housed within Eskom. But right now, let's face it, Eskom understands electricity. Eskom carries our national, carries national accountability to hold it together, despite all the different role players. There's no doubt Eskom have a key role to deliver. And I echo Rensha's sentiments. You know, Eskom's young IDM program, Integrated Demand Management Program, has yielded considerable results, which should be applauded and I feel should be encouraged at this time. Thank you very, very much.
So, Mr. Chief, I could just add one point. There was another industry that was looking at a cogen project just down the road from SA Calcium Carbide, and also employed about 300 people. And they said, no, well, the electricity prices are going up too high. They also, they've got two furnaces at the site, and they decided just to close down. So they actually closed down, retrenched all 300 staff. So that was the other thing that can happen. You either got to do the cogen. They went into negotiation price. So, you know, industry might do it, but some industries also will just say, well, you know, we don't want to invest and we'll close down. So that's the other thing that sometimes happens.
Raul, I just said to Rensha now, that was one of the big motivations on our side as well, because we compete with China. And if we look at what carbide pricing is doing internationally, it's becoming more and more difficult for us to compete in those markets. And if we don't do something like this, in 2 or 3 years, we will no longer be competitive.
My dear honorable members, have you run out of stamina? Oh, yeah. No, I'm just prompted. I think we need not leave this to chance. I appreciate and hear what is being said by what the department is doing, but I know I haven't consulted my comrades. But how about the public hearing? Even if just a one-day thing next term. I mean, if this has a potential of driving how much, 3,500 megawatts, it's worth exploring a little bit with some strong drive. You know, at this stage in time, it was out of curiosity, out of interest, because conceptually we do support it. And if we then, you know, arrange, you know, even if it's just a one-day, you know, public hearings, we then are able to create a platform where we can get more players coming in, to not just those who have already done it. Even the one that you have made reference to, Mr. Hossein, that they decided to close. If you can really humbly, appeal to them to come and present that what would have been the, you know, shall I say, opportunity cost of you know, had they been in the positive side, in any case, had they been able to get whatever, you know, support they got? Because just a wide range of things. I don't know, Mr. Kreling, we have a tussle over IRP 2010, but the thing is, there is some flexibility now in 800 megawatts, but honourable members, we need to ask, is that enough? 800 versus 3,500, you know. What makes the department reluctant? Is it a policy, you know, a restraint or whatever? We need to understand, but then it's our duty as people who do the oversight work to ensure that, you know, if we need to be quite firm about ensuring that there's adequate policy, that's fine. Because even if you or me to Pikusile, Ingula are coming, already people always say, what's beyond them? What's beyond them? Because we want this economy to grow. We've got an economy that's going to pump 3.4 trillion over the 8 years. It doesn't just go on its own without, without there must be energy, you know, concomitant to that. There must be energy, particularly electricity. You know, the whole thing around PPAs, the ease of incentives. You know, one thing that struck a chord to me, other members, is that incentives similar to wind and solar. I said, oh, let's concede that slipped us. Because it never struck us that we should check that why not have, you know, incentives that are similar to wind and solar. And it would be helpful for the department at that public hearings to argue, you know, openly that why haven't they considered that, or are they considering a different option, you know? Enter municipalities, the greatest generators of waste in South Africa, the nine metros, you know. As far back as 2002-03, there was a young chap which came to me about turning, you know, the landfills, you know, and getting energy out of it. We tried our best, but nobody could listen. I mean, look at that time. Surely it was only the converted who could have bought into that. And there it is today, you know. We did go to Etegwini and saw how, you know, come again? Yeah, Marian Hill in Etegwini in Devon. You know, how you can get electricity out of waste. I mean, that's just one metropolitan. It's not the largest in any case. You know, I mean, I have a provocative question since that there are a few minutes left. I'm just looking at my notes. The reduction of lead time, you know, is there any possibility, you know? I 5 years, because I thought the lead time would be less because you actually are developing something on existing infrastructure. So correct me, my naivety, because my assumption then is that you can take less time to develop, or should it integrate then, you know, those incentives to have, you know, a shorter lead time. Any other inputs? That is Lau and then Honorable Kreling.
Chairperson, I must appreciate that the SACC is the only producer of calcium carbide in the continent. I think, and that 50% of what they supply, I bet they produce, they are selling to the local market for the production of acetylene welding gas and acetylene for carbon black, and the zinc carbide batteries. But surely with our view to beneficiation, we are accepting the fact that the customers to which you sell beneficiate these two usable production locally. But exporting 50%, it's a little bit too much. couldn't we be able to expand your mandate? Couldn't you be able to expand your mandate also to get into the same beneficiation, even if it's not necessarily acetylene, into producing any other thing that we can sell, even if we have to export it, but it should be value added. The challenge facing South Africa today is job creation, and the more any company can be innovative to create more jobs, the better for it, for us all in the country. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Chair. I'll be brief. I'm just interested, the 800 megawatts ministerial determination, was that in the IRP, or is that something that is seen as separate to what was originally planned for in the IRP? Because, I mean, I would support your idea of having a public hearing on cogeneration as even part of a series of reviewing the IRP, because what is clearly coming out here, and you talked about the 3,000 megawatt savings as well. What's in the IRP at the moment is only 3,200 megawatts of savings over the next 20 years. Clearly, we've been too conservative around energy efficiency in the current IRP. And I think that all of these factors lead to the conclusion that we should be reviewing the assumptions that underpin this IRP, and that this is a process that we should be engaging in as a committee. So I would certainly support it in that particular way. So I also think, though, that when we do call for public hearings, what we need to check and what we really need to be clear on, Chair, is that the money isn't going to Eskom now for the IDM. I mean, NERSA has said that it's not in the tariff application. So clearly, government is going to have to pick up the slack. And we are going to have a look at how much Eskom was putting into these programs and what government now needs to fund out of Treasury. And I think it's the right approach. I mean, I don't have a problem with that institutionally. I just think we need to be 100% certain as a committee that these projects do not fall off the radar now because they don't have the budget. And we really need to check this with the department and make sure that these things are being funded. So I would fully support public hearings, but I think let's make it very action-orientated. Let's make sure that we make it in such a way that these projects can, in a sense, come online within the next 6 months, the ones that are possible. So because we're in a very tight situation, I think the case has been made very, very well. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Chief. I'm just brief response. I think the comment about the lead time is very valid, but I think the context of today is very different from 5 years ago. So by saying, listening to Henny in terms of the five-year development time frame, I can speak from what I've seen and how the environment has changed. Definitely it should be easier and possible to do and develop this type of project in a much shorter time period. I don't want to put a time limit on it, but if a company make the decision and the board make the decision, I think you can start construction within a year. And I've seen companies where detailed feasibilities has taken 6 months and it's now a matter of sitting with a board and a board need to make that decision. So I'm very, very confident. The one challenge, as we mentioned, is what is the incentive? What is the kickstart? And that's something we need to address. Just a comment on the 800 megawatt. The IRP 2010 did provide for cogeneration, and this first determination of 800 megawatt is in line with the IRP 2010. I certainly will agree a revision of the IRP 2010. I think we raised it with the DOE as well from IDC side. From a renewable energy perspective, for example, we are involved in a number of CSP projects, which we believe is a perfect example of a peak plant that we can put up for R2.50 and not at R6 per kilowatt hour. And from that perspective, we really ask them to review the IRP 2010 just as an example. So I agree. And the IDM and the energy efficiency opportunities are immense. And we do see companies coming to the fore, taking advantage of the opportunity that's being presented. Just as another example, I think it may excite the committee. We, for example, finance a project in Jan Kempdorp. Now, I don't want to go into the detail of exactly the gory detail, because when I took it to my committee at the IDC, some of the members said, Rensha, please stop. I don't want to listen to the detail, because it's an abattoir that takes the waste, the bones and the blood and all the things that comes out of the abattoir's waste. And we assisted them through our Green Energy Efficiency Fund through a loan to put up an energy plant. And they are now generating their own electricity at the abattoir. And I think they're saving close to R1 million a year from electricity costs. So this is a big example. The example I'm mentioning to you was not a big investment by IDC. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Raul, between R2 and R3 million. And there's an abattoir that's now more energy efficient. So there's a number of those examples. And they also got an IDM grant. And what we do as IDC, we're very, very sensitive to double dipping. We don't want companies to come and take all the grants from government and take subsidized funding from IDC. So our funding complement, in many cases the IDM money will come in at a point where the company can prove saving of electricity. So we provide through our Energy Efficiency Fund almost like a bridging facility to companies. As soon as the grant come in, the grant first assist in paying back a level of the loan, so it make it more efficient for companies to take up these type of facilities. So just as another example, it's a small example, but it's a very nice one. Thanks.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think we've come to a close for. Our meeting. Let me thank you for coming, and let me thank both Eskom and Nissan SA in absentia, as well as IDC and SACC, or SA Kasham Kabite, for coming to make a presentation. I think both presentations have been quite thought provocative. The first one makes us think of you know, how we need to accommodate and articulate and internalize technology shifts. Difficult as it may be, you know, human beings love for comfort zones when you bring in new technologies. It takes time to shift the mindset. And as for this one, it's obvious, I'm glad that at least there's positive response from members around the public hearings. And we're doing it on our own. We have an independent tradition of independently looking at things. Even if we didn't in the past, we need to tighten and look at how we can contribute to ensure that we get closer as fast as possible to attainment of the 3,500 megawatts generation. We've been to, if I can share with you, we've been to a number of such you know, initiatives during our study tours. I'm just trying to think. I can't think of it, but I think one of these companies is one that makes tissues, you know, exactly. Nampak, you know, that comes into mind. They work with a lot with CSIR, you know, because there's an initiative that CSIR is doing. There's just a whole list that CSIR has shared with us, because they're very passionate about this. I think that's where we begin to appreciate that this is an opportunity worth looking into. I think, I must say then, SACC, for all your sins, you've really provoked us to take this matter to higher levels now and ensure that we play a role not just as members of parliament or public representatives, but as passionate South Africans to ensure we do our best, you know, in advancing access to affordable electricity in as much sustainable way as is possible. We appreciate all what Eskom and others are doing, but I mean, every day when you look at a poor community, you understand and they are very keen that that should be done faster. And to me, personally, honorable members, to attain that 3,500 megawatts faster, it's not just a gain or a plus for a company. It's saving a job, and at some stage, if well articulated, it goes to even getting those who are getting free basic electricity some better prospects of sustainability. On that score, then let me thank everyone, and just to remind members that next week on the 18th, we'll be getting an update from the department on the Integrated National Electrification Program. There it is, electricity, free basic electricity, as well as free basic alternative energy. Honourable members, we were supposed to have done minutes. We are distributing them. As a passionate environmentalist, I will appeal that we bring them next meeting so that we can adopt them, having gone through them. Let me thank everyone once again. The meeting stands adjourned.